News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
8:06, coming up on 8:07, FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings as we get this 8 o'clock hour rolling. We'll talk with Kyle Hamrick from Lanyap coming up at the bottom of the hour about the latest from Lanyap and local and statewide news. But haven't checked in with Vince Allegri with Allegri Farm Market in Daphne yet this week. Today we're going to change that, Allegri Farm Market in Daphne and what's on the farm this week. Good morning, Vince.
Good morning. How you doing this morning?
Hey, we're doing just fine, and I'd be even better off if I was able to make a trip over to Allegri today. Hopefully I can get over there soon because you guys got it going on. What are you currently harvesting, Vince?
Right now we're strong into collards, a few turnips, big, beautiful bunches, and we also have made their life easier by having them washed, turnips and collards cut up in a bag ready to cook. And we have the smoked ham hocks and the salt meat for the seasoning. Mm. And Patty was able to find a new vendor this week for local pepper sauce for your greens. We were having a little trouble finding some.
Wow.
We did find it.
And it's local, and you guys are local, and we love local stuff around here. So that's great to hear that Patty was able to find that. Also, you know, I'm a huge fan of sweet potatoes. What do you have going on in that department?
Yeah, we're into the new crop of Barnum and sweet potatoes, which have really freshened it up, and they're really good, and people come in and ask for them every day. And for those people who are in a time crunch, we also have pre-made frozen sweet potato casseroles, cornbread dressing, mac and cheese, and everybody's favorite green bean casserole.
Mm, yeah, and this is a big week, obviously, as we head towards Thanksgiving. And if you don't think folks can tell the difference in quality, you know, shopping locally from Allegri Farm Market compared to many other places you can get your Thanksgiving things, I mean, it would be noticeable if you were using our local goods there from Allegri Farm Market. It's just so tasty, the stuff you have there. And you have dessert, too, for folks who are getting, maybe they have that cornered for their Thanksgiving dinner next week.
We've just arrived with some Priester's old-fashioned pecan pies, and they're really good.
Man, that sounds awesome. Hopefully I'll be able to make it over there here in the next few days, and I can pick some stuff up for Thanksgiving next week. Let folks know where to find you.
Hey, we're at the intersection of 181 and 64 in Daphne, 4 miles south of IT on exit 38.
And your hours for folks who are wanting to come by?
7 days a week, 8 to 6, Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5 on Sunday.
All right. We appreciate it, Vince. I know it's a super busy time. I'll let you get back to it.
Thank you.
Vince Allegri, Allegri Farm Market in Daphne, and that is what's on the farm this week. And Sean read a really good text a couple days ago. I think it was Alan who texted him. Said, hey, we're really trying to focus on shopping locally and eating healthy, and they've been going to Allegri Farm Market. They've made it their new thing.
I heard Sean talking about that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
Well, you know that you know, the message is being received.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we get Vince on, and it's not just a little content for the show, but people are actually reacting to him and saying, well, that sounds good to me, and actually... Yeah, they're making the Allegri Farm a big part of their diet.
Yeah, and they have more than just the produce, and you heard him talk about some of that there, but like the Kaneka sausage products, too. So if you haven't been over there, check it out, Allegri Farm Market in Daphne.
Well, the pie got my attention. sounded good.
It always gets my attention. Let's see, Texture said, Dalton, did I just hear you say Thanksgiving? I don't think, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I misspoke, but I believe the holiday is Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving. I saw this article. I was just kind of, you know, doing my usual yesterday and going through a lot of the local news and make my daily trip to AL.com.
Okay.
And I just kind of wanted to bring this up. I thought it was funny that they posted this story here. And you know how sometimes they'll take work from another media outlet and post it there.
Yeah.
And they're not the only ones that do that.
No,
you know,
no.
A lot of the local media uses sister stations, TV stations, or what have you. But
yeah, a lot of those newspapers are now joined, you know, within one giant newspaper family or corporation, if you will.
So this story that they posted yesterday from Inside Climate News,
okay,
which kind of gives you a tip on which direction they're headed here. But the headline, Scorching Saturdays, the Rising Heat Threat Inside Football Stadiums. And it's just kind of comical to me that, and I don't know if these authors, Olivia McMurray and Lee Hedgepeth, are from Alabama or have been to many football games.
Or if they've ever seen a football.
Or if they've seen a football. But they want you to know it's hot out there. It's hot out there in these SEC football stadiums for these games. And they tell a couple stories about people who have been treated for heat-related conditions at some of these games. And, you know, breaking news, they brought the thermometer out there, and it's hot. It's hot during these games, especially during August and September.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I don't know how in the world, like, the players execute out in that heat. Mm-hmm. It's beyond me.
I don't either. And, you know, early in the season,
they do
a lot of cramping.
You have some cramping and things like that.
And of course, you have the gamesmanship where even if you're the home team early in the season, you want to wear the light-colored jerseys. And if you're playing a team with dark-colored jerseys like most have, but especially like a Vanderbilt that wears black.
Yeah, and another thing that they do is they generally take the shady side of the stadium is for the home team. Mm. You know, the shade gets there sooner. So the cooler side of the stadium is for the home team, where the other team is roasting all afternoon long.
But this is nothing new.
No, it's nothing new.
It's nothing new. How long have some of these SEC rivalries been going on? I thought it was kind of comical that they're telling a bunch of Alabamians how hot it is at these football games. An Inside Climate News analysis of data from inside stadiums found temperatures can spike for hours from 10 to 16 degrees Fahrenheit higher than outside heat, depending on the venue. You know, you get in those stadiums and a lot of wind is blocked because they're coliseums at this point.
Yeah, you're right.
And you got a lot more people in there. So, yeah, of course it's hotter inside during the game. And maybe if it's your first time going to one of these games, you'd be like, whoa, I had no idea. But I think for most people, they've been out there in that heat. And
it can be rough, though.
It can be rough.
I mean, I remember the South game at Ladd years ago, maybe around 2015 or so. They just had all kinds of students just passing out from the heat. Mm. And then they next up what they did by the next weekend, I believe, that they played at home at Ladd. This is before Hancock Whitney was built. They made sure that there was bottled water on the house for anybody who needed it at any time.
Yeah, and I think quite a few schools, I know some NFL teams do that. They at least have the water station, right, where you can refill if you need, if they're not outright giving you water bottles for free. But I can't, you know, any close calls that I've seen. I know when my brother was really little, which means I was also really little, just not as little as him. But he kind of, maybe it was me. That's how long ago it was. But one of us overheated and just took a little water rag and put it on your head and kind of wait it out and get better. I remember going to a Troy game a member or members of the band who were outside of the stadium in August.
Passing out?
Just falling out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I know the band has it rough too with all that extra clothing and the hats they wear.
Well, hopefully, lots of times in August they don't make them wear the big band uniform. They're basically in a T-shirt, you know, but I guess they have, like, band pants on, so that's hot enough.
I don't know why. I just found it comical that they wanted to let everyone in the South know how hot it is at these games. And it looks like in this story they wrote about 3,000 words. So it's basically a novel to tell you, hey, when you go out to these college football
games,
it might be hot.
So I did a little research here, and y'all tell me on the text line how accurate this is. I'm thinking, has the temperature changed? We remarked how this November has been very warm, obviously. Now, doing high school football on TV, almost to the, you can just, for 26 years now doing that, and it's almost been like, so we have our golf shirts, and then we also have a jacket that's got a vest that you can take out of the jacket or wear the vest alone or wear the jacket and the vest
fancy
together.
Fancy, convertible.
It's like a convertible. And so almost every year we never wear anything but the golf shirt until the final weekend. And then there's a little cool snap. I guess there have been some late Octobers that were just flat out cold.
Yeah.
But the average temperature, now y'all tell me if this is correct or not. In Mobile, Alabama, I guess this is right now, just even before what we've experienced this winter, or this fall, I should say, because it's been a little unusually warm. It looks like the average November temperature, on average, high temperature is 69 degrees.
Okay.
In 1960, according to AI or Google or whatever I've gotten to respond to me, 62 degrees. Oh. Is that possible?
So 1960
to today, which is, you know, half a century, a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
The temperature was, the average high temperature in the month of November in 1960 was 62 degrees, low was 39. Now the average high temperature is 69 and the low of 53.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know if that was just for that November in 1960 that it was that average, or if it was kind of an average over the years. I don't know. But
That seems like a bigger swing than I would have imagined.
And that's part of what this article is trying to get to, this Inside Climate
News. Well,
maybe
there's something to get to.
They say, well, in 2040, it's going to be 5 degrees hotter in Tuscaloosa than it is right now.
Well, you always hear those things, too. You hear those projections about Miami will be underwater in a year and a half.
Yeah. So, projecting that stuff, and even some of the revisionist history and kind of picking and choosing stats. This has just been a strange November, but we've had recently really cold Novembers or whatever you may have. I mean, had an ice storm at the beginning of this year or late last year. And I don't see them writing about that in Inside Climate News either.
No, Inside Climate News, you think, is talking about, Inside Climate Change.
Yes.
Probably with the, but I would like to, I'm going to look, numbers don't lie. If those numbers are what they are, and they're the average high temperature in the month of November in 1960 in Mobile, Alabama, was 7 degrees cooler than the average high temperature now, that's something.
That is something. I will say it's a lot hotter if you're watching your team that is not very good.
Yeah.
If you're in there under the heat and they're really bad. Let's, we actually have a phone call on this. Let's go to James. He's on line one. Hey, James.
Good morning, Dan and Dalton there. How y'all doing?
Doing good, James. How are you?
I'm being blessed. I want to talk about the heat thing because I was in the military. First off, of course, you condition yourself. That's why you go through all this process, even during permanent party, where you go out and practice war games and go out in the woods and live like a hermit. It's truly, it's getting warmer, but there's a logical reason. You're building more asphalt roads. You're building more concrete walkways.
Hmm.
Everything is building up around you, which is reflecting. It's not like the trees the way they do. They give us all our good oxygen, So that's what's really happening. I remember during Easter, it was like freezing to me. I couldn't get warm. But it is warmer, but it's created by all the buildup that we're having. We build homes close to schools,
mm-hmm.
stadiums. Stadiums are, the way they're built, they really are not built, to me, efficiently to blow or draw in air. They should have up in the upper part of the stadium large opening so you can get the draft, draw it in through fans or something. But there's one other thing I want to mention about here, which has nothing to do with that.
Yes.
That I've been wanting to call y'all about.
Okay.
Whenever you order a double cheeseburger, what do you expect to get?
A burger with cheese on it and two patties.
Two patties.
How many pieces of cheese?
No.
I guess it depends. If you get the McDouble, I think they give you one. I think double cheeseburger, you get two.
Well, the word double cheeseburger, we would all assume it means double cheese with the burger, right?
Mm. I would not.
Oh.
Well, this is something I want y'all to investigate. I want to know why Burger King will sell these double cheeseburgers, and they told me it's a policy, one piece of cheese, but most places that if you get the bigger burger, give you the two pieces of cheese.
Mm.
McDonald's don't fudge on that.
Yeah.
But I want y'all to kind of get somebody to investigate that.
Sounds like a good investigation. I think I'm on it, James.
Well, I know what you're saying, but, this is what's going on to me in the world. I mean, people, you get these phone calls and say, well, I'm going to help you make some money when you wind up, it's an insurance, somebody trying to sell you insurance or life insurance, mm-hmm. or something like that. A way for you as a veteran, I can help you increase your disability. When you call the number, they're selling a burial plot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's all really kind of out of control,
It does feel like everyone's trying to get one over on you these days.
Yeah, there's a scam a minute for sure. If I make a double cheeseburger at home, I'm okay with one.
You just put the one piece
bit of cheese on.
Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah.
No way,
well,
man.
I understand. We all understand that. I mean, that's you making it. When you go out I go out there and pay $6 for, you know, a couple of hamburgers.
Yep.
If you advertise that, but this is what, see, you know, y'all were talking about earlier about the scams.
Yes.
The lady in Florida and all that. And where's all this coming from? It seems to be a natural. And I'm having a hard time with that. I'm 70 years old, December the 6th. I want to come down and see y'all during the Veterans Day, but I miss you once again. Mm. I apologize.
Well, that's all right. It was a cold morning. And but by the way, James, if you keep with this revolution that you're to overthrow Burger King because they don't give you enough cheese, you're going to need that cemetery plot. You want to call that number back?
Oh, yeah.
No. Hey, no, y'all,
James.
Come on now.
James leading the No Kings no kings protest.
Hey, James, thanks for calling us this morning, buddy. Be good. 822 FM Talk 106.5. So they tell you that they're going to save you some money, and then you and in good faith you dial this number, and it's somebody trying to sell you a cemetery plot.
Oh, man, that's dark.
822, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 827. Fox News poll came out. One of the big headlines this morning, not really good news for Trump, and it seems to be the economy. People who are Trump supporters or were or voted for the man, not happy with basically what we're paying for goods and services because inflation has been a problem. And more blame is they're blaming Trump rather than blaming the former administration, Biden, mm-hmm. And more people who were Trump supporters or maybe still aren't Trump supporters are still mad about the way he's run the country. And I guess, does it all kind of go back to tariffs?
Maybe. I mean, yeah, that plays obviously a huge role in the economics of it all. But
so many numbers here, it's hard to really break it down. But it's not a positive for Trump. That's the headline.
No, the main vibe I'm getting from Trump voters, and I guess I'm commiserating with them all the same, is that it seems he's been spending so much more time focused on international issues, which aren't not important. But that domestic issues have kind of fallen. That's the appearance it's given. But I was thinking about this, and as some government numbers start to come in after the shutdown, you know, some of those were delayed. I guess they just got another good jobs report that really kind of defied expectations, you know, that term they like to use a lot. And I believe they said the third quarter, actually, GDP was looking better than it did initially. Remember, though, when we were talking about this at the very beginning of his term, and all of these plans, and as he started laying these tariffs down, I remember very clearly us and so many others saying, short-term pain, long-term gain.
That's right. So what's the definition of short-term? That's what you'd have to know, right?
I'd say
we're like, it's still been very short-term.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you keep the faith, right, that these economic policies will work out, then certainly we're in the short-term pain part of it.
Well, I think there's got to be some messaging to remind us of that, to say, okay, remember we said short-term pain?
Yes.
People?
And that's what's been missing.
That's what's been missing.
When he comes out and says, no, things actually aren't that expensive, where you start to kind of go wrong. Because things are expensive.
We know Trump can be a showman and arrogant, but when people are really dealing with high...
Getting your morning moving. Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig.
All right, y'all let us know. Is that fog easing up a little bit out there?
Yeah, it looks, well, just from my perch here, looks like it's easing up, but it's still out there. And there have been accidents. You heard Kane talking about traffic there. This texter said ASAP service, so they get out there to help with the vehicles that get stalled out or broken down. Says helping a BMW westbound on the I-10 bridge, so westbound on the Bayway, an issue today. And also, believe it or not, one of the major storylines on our text line right now is how many pieces of cheese are supposed to be on a double cheeseburger.
Yeah, I thought the level of outrage...
Over
a slice of cheese was a little much, but he
thought it was misplaced outrage.
Yeah,
I guess I'm too close to the
you're too close.
The story. Yeah,
you're from a McDonald's family.
I worked in McDonald's a lot.
In Grove Hill, you were the rich kid.
That's why I broke out, you know, the single slice for the McDouble and the two slices for the double cheeseburger. I know it like the back of my hand. Yeah. But Kyle Hamrick with Lanyap's on with us, too. And you sounded shocked that James expected two pieces of cheese on a double cheeseburger, Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, you're already paying for two patties. I don't know what more you could expect.
Well,
I mean,
another piece of cheese is what James wants. He wants it to look a certain way. You know, like when you look at the burger, you can see the orange in between the two pieces of the two patties,
mm-hmm.
and then the orange on top. Yeah. That's pleasing to his eye, and that's okay. But palate.
I mean, you can't go wrong with more cheese.
I guess not. But Leanna was saying sometimes it's not that much meat. Maybe sometimes the cheese can kind of overwhelm the taste of the meat.
We'll have to keep that rolling on the text line because we have a lot of actual news to discuss. And Kyle, prolific as always in the latest edition of Lanyap. And why don't we start with a video that went viral yesterday, and I'll note, I have both of my kids go to Cottage Hill, and so we were paying close attention to this, but a elementary teacher there, Randy Nicole Staples, booked into jail yesterday in a video that went viral online that showed her whooping her child, one of her children, with a belt. And I watched the video, and I know we've been getting a lot of takes on this on the text line, same as usual, you know, people saying, well, that's how it was when I was a kid, and it's good, teach the kids to not be some raging criminal, but I just from what I saw, it seemed incredibly excessive. It seemed like, and don't have the full context, but she seemed to be shouting at the child about mm-hmm. not picking up after himself or something.
Yeah. I didn't see it, but from what you told me, that's all I know.
And again, you know, it's like a 50-second video, so there could be context missing, but she's been arrested and no longer with the school, Kyle.
Yeah, I am trying to get some more information on this story. This is some news that broke yesterday afternoon, 5 o'clock news dump, as we call it. This video appears to show her hitting her son with a belt, from my count, 23 times. That's what mm-hmm. the sheriff said, that this was her son. There's a press conference coming mid morning where we expect to get some more information on this case, but I believe that she has bonded out of Metro on a felony charge of child of abuse for a minor who's under the age of 18. And I tried to see where Cottage Hill had posted yesterday afternoon a statement saying that Staples was on some kind of paid leave, mm-hmm. but that statement had been taken down within a few minutes. This is definitely a developing story here. There's definitely more to this story, I think, than, you know, what we've seen so far on social media.
Okay.
What do you, Kyle? What do you mean by that? What do you think? What's more? What's missing?
Well, we need to hear from her. We need to hear from her family. Get some charging documents here that kind of explains these things with some more context. She, of course, is innocent until she's proven guilty. So okay. I'm interested to see, you know, what comes out here. But definitely by the looks of the video, it definitely looked like a lot, to
yes.
say the least.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, I couldn't get online yesterday, Facebook notably, mostly, without seeing, I mean, this has drawn so many comments near and far.
Yeah.
Everyone has a hot take on it. And I guess I feel bad for everyone that's, you know, actually involved, like family members here and
mm-hmm.
and people that, I mean, a teacher. We know how much
right
people care about their teachers they've had or have. And from what I've heard, I mean, she just won Teacher of the Year at Cottage Hill, and people can people can be different outside of work than they are at work, you know, and people snap. So I don't know. I that's great that you say that, Hammer. Kyle, I think we need to hear from family and other members who are closer to this, but it certainly hasn't kept people from saying, well, back in my day, or on the other side saying she needs to be put under the jail. And I think somewhere some patience and kind of, you know, see where this goes is a good thing. The city city council meeting this week, finally voting on the vacant buildings. How long was this in the mix?
This had been in the mix since September. This was one of Mayor Sandy Stimson's, you know, last acts of office, was to put forth an ordinance to create some stricter upkeep standards for vacant properties downtown. And it has been hotly debated and delayed by the city council for weeks. To the point where this was, you know, Mayor Spiro Chiragatis's, you know, first big pushes of office here to crack down on these vacant properties.
Kyle, right up to the very end, pretty much, because of, I mean, Ben Reynolds opposed the language of the ordinance right up to the end. He had objections.
Right.
He wanted to amend it in some way. What was Ben's main concern?
Ben's deal, and this was an amendment that he had talked about and had put forward for weeks in a back and forth with the city. He wanted to make the ordinance where the responsibility would be on the city to go out and identify these vacant properties and put them on the registry, rather than that responsibility being left to the building owners. He compared that to somebody running a stop sign and then calling the police to say that they've run a stop sign. He said that it should be the city and code enforcement's job to go down the street and say, this building is vacant, this one needs to be on the registry. And the council did not go for that language. His amendment was voted down on the floor, and after that he said that this is a bad law, that he didn't think that folks are going to comply with it the way that the city wants them to. And then when he spoke to media after the meeting, he alluded to Mayor Chiragatis's comments that, you know, this is a tiger of an ordinance, and Ben said, you know, that this is more like a small mammal. This is more of a possum than a tiger.
Wow.
The color there.
The vacant building honor code basically would is the way the city's going to do it, right?
Well, and so they've got that. They've got the requirement in there where you have to voluntarily sign yourself on to this registry if you believe that you're vacant. But also, the city does have the ability to give you a notice that you need to sign on to it as well. So there's a mix of both there.
Okay.
Where the responsibility is kind of on both. The city's not in entirely powerless here. Because, you know, if you don't comply with this ordinance, the city can ultimately take you to court, and I believe that you can be charged with a misdemeanor, you know, if you're found, you know, to just be flagrantly violating this thing here.
In that, so that's an area that's, you know, one spot of town, Broad Street, Water Street, you know, the in-between government, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, so, or canal maybe. Inside that area, downtown area, is there a running total? Is there a percentage of buildings that the city considers vacant?
Yeah.
An actual number, or what is that number?
Yes, the fire department has said that there has estimated that there could be roughly 140 buildings downtown that could fall under this ordinance here.
Wow.
That's a lot. That's a lot of plywood and, you know, empty structures that could be coming under this thing here. It goes into effect 6 months from now, and then once it goes into to effect, there's another period of 6 months where property owners have to assess their buildings and see if they qualify to be on the registry.
Kyle, I'm also interested too. I mean, we have two new council members, District 2 Samantha Ingram, District 5 Bo Fleming. What's been their vibe here with them getting started this month? I know they voted with everyone except Reynolds this week, but what are you seeing from them here early on?
From Councilwoman Ingram in District 2, you know, this ordinance, you know, covers her district.
Yes.
She's been on board with the city's proposal. She did put forth an amendment that basically says that any demolitions that have to be done in relation to the vacant properties ordinance has to be done, you know, in accordance with the city's, you know, like code rules. Seems like a pretty standard thing to me, but it's something that she put forward. And then District 5 have not heard much from him on this one. He mm-hmm. definitely seemed to be on board with the city's proposal for it. But there is some interest in the council to see how this ordinance works, and then to possibly expand it to some other parts of the city or the city as a whole. Because vacant properties are not something that's exclusive to downtown.
Yeah, and then if and when that's expanded, I imagine there's going to be a whole lot more pushback than we saw just for this mm-hmm. part with just downtown. But yeah, the reason I was kind of asking about the new council members, sometimes somebody gets elected and they come in and they're just guns a-blazing and letting everybody know how they mm-hmm. feel about everything. And then sometimes it's more of like a kind of get in where you fit in and mm-hmm. once you feel comfortable enough to speak up. So I was trying to kind of see how you felt about Fleming and Ingram here early on.
Yeah, that part where they're trying to get in and fit in and, you know, see kind of what their role is and what they can do. That's kind of the vibe that I'm getting from both of them.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I don't know Ingram. I know Bo well enough that I would think that would be mm-hmm. he would be tactful, mm-hmm. you know, and respectful the fact that he doesn't know it all.
Also, we're heading towards the primaries here quickly, Kyle, and we already have one rematch in House District 96. You have Matt Simpson and Danielle Duggar, and they ran against each other in the. In the 22 primaries, with Simpson, of course, winning, he's the incumbent. So things are lining up for a busy winter here as we head towards primaries.
Absolutely, I went back and read some of our old coverage from that race, and I believe that Matt Simpson carried, I think, 55% of the vote there. So it was, you know, it was a pretty competitive race. We've not seen any kind of back and forth yet between Simpson and Duggar. Simpson, of course, you know, has been in the House since 2018. He has put forward bills to increase the mandatory minimum sentences for people convicted of trafficking fentanyl. He's championed the Baldwin Prep School there with its career workforce curriculum. And then Danielle Duggar is a mom from Spanish Fort who works as a legal analyst for, I believe it's the National Vaccine Information Center. She has made some of her campaign stances clear on her Facebook page, her campaign profile. But it definitely gears up, you know, for an interesting race. Mm-hmm. It's a rematch of 2022, and we shall see how it goes. Matt definitely has some momentum here with some of the bills that he's put forth. Yeah, and it's definitely one that we'll be watching here at Lanyap with some interest.
Well, we'll be following it all the way through with your writing and the rest of the folks there at Lanyap. Kyle, of course, got the free edition on stands now for this week's Lanyap, but online is a great way to go as you get them as they're published, lanyapmobile.com. Appreciate you, and thanks for coming on with us this morning, Kyle.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for the information, Kyle. Thanks for the reporting as well. It's 8:51 FM Talk. You know, yeah, Matt Simpson has hardly been like a silent House member. He's championed certain causes and been a newsmaker, correct?
Yes, yeah, especially as far as the criminal element with
his past DA background.
Yeah, his background. But, you know, they run it back. I wonder if Duggar will have any better numbers. We got a long way to go before that primary, though.
Not a long way to go with this show. We'll wrap it up and also tell you who Jeff's got on deck coming up.
Have a traffic tip or your own take on the news? Text the guys at 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 856. Jeff's got a show on the way. Dalton?
He sure does. The Democrat response to get you started at 9:30. Former Congressman Parker Griffith on with Jeff. And hour number two, April Marie Fogel joins the show from 1819 News. And Pathway Church's Travis Johnson in hour number three. Now that the House is in, by the way, off of their extended break during the shutdown.
They're back.
Yeah, they're passing just one thing after another. So we'll have that throughout the, well, tomorrow and next week. We'll probably be talking about a lot of the things they're passing. But judges keep on judging, too. Did you see this? A federal judge has ordered the release of 446 migrants arrested in Chicago between June and October. The judge ruled their warrantless arrests violated a 2022 consent decree. They'll be freed this week on $1,500 bond unless deemed a serious security risk. 57 remain in custody. I guess those who had been asked previously to be deported will be the ones that stay in custody. Those who it's their first time, if they were brought in during this big crackdown in Chicago, then they're going to be let out this week unless the appeal works. The Trump administration has appealed. That judge refused to delay the releases as the case moves to the Seventh Circuit.
So they're released. It's understood that they shouldn't be here, correct?
I mean, I believe so. I believe these are illegal immigrants.
So they get released out of jail, so they're back on the streets, which makes them illegal once again. Am I wrong?
No.
So this is kind of a hamster wheel.
It feels like a hamster wheel, definitely.
So
yeah.
The judge is saying they were detained illegally.
They said they
even though they are illegal, there was didn't do it right in the arresting of them.
That's the way I understand it.
So you have to let them go, but now when you let them go, they become illegal again.
I think so. Yeah.
So I'm trying my best.
I wonder how we're wasting so much money around here.
And I'm wondering how the hell I didn't get into law school. It sounds like anybody would be eligible to go that route.
Oh man! And we didn't even get time to talk about the Democrat from Florida.
Oh yeah,
who stole $5 million in pandemic funds?
Only $5 million and shot it all kinds of false accounts and everything, and ended up in her campaign war chest.
Will we ever get the full picture of how much fraud there was from all that pandemic money flying around?
Never. 8:59, Jeff Poore on the way. We'll see you tomorrow beginning at 6 a.m. Dan and Dalton in Mobile Mornings.